Hey, I'm Ryan Reynolds.
Recently, I asked Mint Mobile's legal team if big wireless companies are allowed to raise prices due to inflation. They said yes. And then when I asked if raising prices technically violates those onerous two-year contracts, they said, what the f*** are you talking about, you insane Hollywood ass f-. So to recap, we're cutting the price of Mint Unlimited from $30 a month to just $15 a month.
Give it a try at mintmobile.com/switch.
$45 up front for 3 months plus taxes and fees. Promo rate for new customers for limited time. Unlimited more than 40 gigabytes per month. Slows full terms at mintmobile.com.
Burrow is a furniture company known for timeless design, thoughtful construction, and little details that make life in your space easier. And now they're bringing that comfort and style outside with their outdoor collection. Burrow's outdoor furniture is built to withstand the elements, featuring rust-proof stainless steel hardware, weather-ready teak, and quick-dry stain-resistant foam cushions. As always, you get free shipping on every order. Get 15% off at burrow.com/acast. burrow.com/acast.
There's no time to rest when your foe doesn't sleep. System Shock by Origin successfully weaves adventure and action to create a novel science fiction challenge. Marvel at the first-person 3D smooth-scrolling viewpoint as you jump, lean around corners, look up and down, crawl, and even fly in rocket boots. Experience the most sophisticated physics system in a computer game, complete with variable gravity, recoil, and explosions. Listen to the new dynamically layered music system while viewing realistic illumination effects.
Oh, boy.
Oh, dude, he nerded that game up.
Low rent. Hey, everybody. Welcome back to Play Retro. This is Play Retro. This is for Friday, March 22nd, 2024. I'm Scott Johnson, one of your hosts, and this robot-controlled place is very scary to me, and I don't want to die in here. But hey, if you are literally changing what people expect out of a shooter, well, then maybe I'll give you the respect you deserve. How many more shocks do you have in you? That many? Wow, that is shocking.
Shocking. And I'm your other host, Brian Dunaway, and I just woke up from a six-month cyber coma nap. A long rest to heal for my new military-grade neural implant. Because I'm a hacker from the future, where their shirts are ironic, games use the whole damn keyboard, and the AI is unethical. Oh boy, this game is a little too immersive. Somebody wake me up, Scott. Somebody wake me up.
You saying System Shock predicted our current climate of AI freakoutness? Is that what you're saying to me?
Maybe. In ironic shirts and using the whole damn keyboard. I mean, save some for the rest of us, dude.
Yeah, it's like the buffalo. You got to eat the whole buffalo. Use all the buffalo.
Oh, yeah, you got to eat the whole buffalo. You got to eat the butthole and everything. The buffalo butthole.
Oh, and there's nothing like a butthole buffalo. Butthole. Buffalo butthole. There's nothing like that.
Buffalo butthole.
Anyway, yeah. We're going to talk about System Shock today, and you might say to yourselves, whoa, is that old? It is. 94, that thing came out. It's old as dirt.
Wow.
And
That's like 30 years if you did quick math.
Yeah, it's real pretty close. It's a year my oldest daughter was born, which is pretty freaky, but she never played this, and maybe none of you did either, but we're going to talk about it. It's System Shock, and it really did give birth to all the other shocks. Which we'll get into later, thanks to many of the folks that worked on this thing. We'll do that in a minute, but before we do, we're going to talk a little bit about what happened in the Our Retro Lives this week, and I'm going to tell you that I played hardly anything retro, but I played something with retro roots in it, and that is this game called Boar Blasters. I may have even mentioned Boar last Blasters. Week, I was just sort of getting my hang
now,
of
last
week.
Now, is that like boring into the ground, or is that like Pumbaa?
No, it's like boring into the ground, like mining.
Okay, gotcha.
Like,
right. So, so like Armageddon on an asteroid, right?
A little bit.
So, yeah.
A little bit. In fact, yeah, they
Bruce
kind
Wilson
of are
asteroids.
They kind of are asteroids. Well, these subterranean things you got to dig down through. And each level is kind of generated randomly, and there's a lot of stuff to fight and kill and do. But mostly you're trying to dig down through the earth and these different kinds of earths. You know, like
Earth.
This one's a little thicker and harder to shoot through. This one's a little softer and easy to get through.
Oh, interesting. So you're an asteroid, but you just called it Earth.
Well,
is that how that works?
Sure. The ground is, the Earth of the there's two Earths.
We call
there's
it a Earth planet. Here on Earth.
There's a planet, and then there's the stuff. And I'm talking about the stuff.
Okay.
All right.
Right.
So you're in there. Gotcha. You're digging down there. There's gems of all kinds. There's gold. There's all this stuff you're trying to get those up to. You are a dwarf, after all. So it's all about dwarves and digging for treasure. And it's 2D, so it's very, and it's pixels, all retro looking. This came out on Steam. And it's got this amazing loop. I am so freaking hooked on it. It runs incredibly well on Steam Decks. I would recommend this without...
What's it about space dwarves and drilling that always excites us?
I don't know. I'm into it, though. I love it.
What's that 3D one that we played for it, the dwarves with the
that one's called that one's called shit. I play it all the time. We call
it Dwarf on Asteroids.
We call it Dwarf Game, but that's not what it's called. It's called Rock and Stone. What is the name of the damn thing?
Rock Blasters. No, Rocket. No. Oh my God. See, Boar Blasters, I'm going to remember because it says the word that it should be called Dwarf Blasters, though, or Boar Dwarf.
Oh, where is it? That's going to piss me off. I'm trying to get it before the chat does it. Deep Rock Galactic. No, that's it.
Too fast.
Deep Rock Galactic.
That's it.
Yeah. Also a very cool game. But anyway, it's got that vibe. And, you know, even if you're like old school fans of Dig Dug or something, there's something to like in this thing. I'm super, super into it.
I like the idea that there's like these hardcore Dig Dug fans out there. And we need to do that. We need to do a Dig Dug episode.
Have we not done Dig Dug? We haven't done that.
We have not done Dig Dug. Is Lode Runner also Dig Dug?
No, but it's... I guess you dig. I don't know. Lode Runner's back... Lode Runner, you still do, you know, you dig a hole, right? And you do holes,
right, whole
things, you know. I don't know. It's not the same though. You're not after like gold and gems and stuff. But anyway, right. It's very good. I love
Let's
it.
Do a digger games. Yeah,
yeah. Make more digger games, and I really like what is the one? Steam Dig, the Steam Dig ones, Dig Steam oh,
yeah.
Dig,
yeah, Steam Dig,
the robot ones. What are they called? What's wrong with me?
See, I have an excuse. We've been talking about this all week in other podcasts that me and Scott do, but I've been inundated by this yellow pollenist, the pine pollen here in the southern part of the United States, and it ruins your brain for rational recall.
Right.
And so I was surprised I was able to pull that out of my ass.
Nice job.
But yeah, and so Scott's apparently being affected by something that must affect mountain folk.
Yeah. No, wait, look.
Bunch of mountain folk.
I got a lot of mountain folk blood in me. So this is all, yeah. It's all happening. Yeah. Steam World Dig. That's what it's called. Steam World Dig 1. Steam World Dig 2 is amazing. The new city builder thing they made is real good. Like those guys know how to do it. And the whole premise of those things is you're digging. You're always digging. So go play this game. It's called Boar Blasters. It's Total Blast. B-O-R-E Blasters. And I love it. It's so good, dude. It's a really good game. Oh, also.
Not bored one time.
Also, yeah. A little bit of an announcement. On Sunday after FilmSack, Brian, mm-hmm. myself, and Brian
and
Dunaway.
Brian Ibbett.
Or Brian Ibbett, rather.
Oh, right.
I had two Brian Dunaways in my head for some reason. That's a crazy thought. We're going to sit down and we're going to watch the new X-Men 97 thing on Disney Plus. That's right. That's the theme. We're going to do that in a stage in Discord. And we're going to make it so everybody who wants to come watch with us can. You can all come in. We're not going to lock it down. Right. But I am going to do video archives with our commentary on them for patrons only. So patrons will get that stuff when we're done. But prior to that, we're all going to watch it. And we're going to watch at least, I just think the first two is our plan this Sunday. So
Yes. They really dropped two. So for those in the future who are listening, we're right in the hotness of the new X-Men reboot, relaunch kind of deal thing. This Apple? Who did this?
This is Disney.
Disney. Oh, because Disney. So yeah, the X-Men, the new ones. Are coming out, so we're so stoked. And they dropped the first two as they usually do, mm-hmm. and they'll probably drop one every week after that. So this Disney,
we're gonna do the entire series, but we're gonna start with these two. We're gonna watch them on Sunday, and if you want to come watch along with us, that would be awesome. We would love to have you there. Frogpants.com/discord to get into the Discord to start with. You don't have to do anything fancy, no fancy passwords. You don't have to enter some mm-mm. special, you know, mm-hmm. form or anything. You just get in. Just don't be a dick. Mm-hmm. That's all we ask. And mm-hmm. we'll do these live. That day, right after FilmSack, which right now I don't know what time we end FilmSack is the problem, so I can't give you an exact time, but it's probably going to be around 11 Mountain Time, which is about one your time.
One my time.
Yeah, Eastern, so we should make that
It'll probably be one. Are you going to try to edit the show first before we watch, or are you just going to go straight, roll right into the...
Might roll right into it, because then I can do it.
All right, let's do it. Yeah. It'll probably be between 1 and 1:30 then, because that's typically when I get out. Or as my family tells me when I go, hey, we should be done about 1. And they all look at me and go, Right.
Yeah.
It's more like 115, 130, Brian. I'm like, okay, fine. Okay. Stupid.
Yeah, we'll do.
Calling me out of my bullshit.
Yeah, nobody. That's what your family's for, dude. That's what they do.
Yeah, yeah.
Anyway.
Keep me straight.
That'll be good. Straight. And we'll set it up so it's obvious that it's there. And we'll tell everybody about it at a time and all that stuff. So watch for that. You also turned 111 years old this week. How does that feel?
Yes, it was my 111th birthday, and I grabbed my my magic ring and I disappeared. And when I came back, I got this 8-bit do retro mechanical keyboard. Mouse is still on the way. This is upside down, by the way. This box here should be like this.
Where's the big buttons? You got the big two-button AB thing, right? Comes with that or no?
That's right. So you got the big AB button, which you can assign apparently. So you can. Oh, I got that one upside down too, man. I can't stop putting this upside down. What I'm showing right now is this sweet, I got the 8-bit do mechanical retro keyboard. And what's so cool about this is that it is kind of themed like the NES. There's a Famicom version and there is a NES version. And this has got that, what is that cream kind of grayish color that that Nintendo, the NES's came as. And it's got those really vibrant, bright. Well, it comes with like these big two giant programmable buttons. I don't know exactly what I'm supposed to do with these big giant buttons. But I can't wait to hit them. They're kind of like the big easy buttons I used to make fun of on that. What was it? Staples? Is that you said the easy button? Yeah. I can't remember the commercial.
I think it was Staples.
If you can envision those things. Yeah. Right.
So how come you didn't get how come you got the NES styled one and not the Famicom colored one?
The Famicom one was a little sexier. Okay. So what happened was I wasn't expecting to get this thing at all. I'd actually added this before it went on sale while it was still in pre-order. I added it to my wish list and I had totally forgotten about it. But my family, they went and they saw it on my wish list and they picked it up and I was quite surprised. Look at that. It's got the little dongle that you have. You get the 8-bit doos. It's got your little, brick, NES brick looking thing so that you can plug that right in. I think it's Bluetooth uses that. It also uses USB-C type connector. But that, remember that big giant button? Well, apparently you can order two more because it's got an AB and an XY plug in on the back of this thing.
Nice.
So maybe you can get two more. But I do have the NES mouse. It's still in its way. It's going to take a little longer. But there's a big AB button right here on the keyboard itself as well.
Why don't they send you a full? They should send you a D-pad as well, like a big fat D-pad. That'd be cool.
Oh, that would be nice. I was curious about that. Why they didn't make like the arrow keys on this thing? It is a mechanical keyboard, and it's one of the quieter. What is that? A brown maybe?
I don't know what to call that. I like that though. It's nice, clicky, nice.
Yeah, it's nice. It's a nice clicky brown keyboard. It's got your old. Remember how I used to get Microsoft keyboards and they would have like the volume controls on it and so the Logitech ones too, but it's got all these little programmable buttons up here that like the start and the home, different buttons, everything, but it's very themed, much like the NES. I like the way the Famicom looked, but this is going to look really good with my Raspberry Pi NES themed box. So I got a Raspberry Pi 4. It has like looks like a little NES Mini.
I have one too. So it looks like that. The case is
really good with that.
I bought that same case for my Raspberry Pi 3, I think.
Yes.
And it looks just like a little weird, you know, mini box thing. It's weird. Yeah.
But this is going to be cool. I'm going to do that. Maybe I should look for some more and see if I can find that Raspberry Pi 5 just came out. Those are starting to come into stock. So maybe I'll do something like that so I can get a nice little desktop theme and all that stuff. Use Retro Arch. They call it Retro Pi.
Retro Pi
is what they call it on that one. Yeah.
$91.99 is the price for this thing on Amazon. And it seems like it's reviewed really well. People like it.
Yeah. People are my family loves me.
That's adorable.
And the chat makes a good point. Anytime I get one of these big giant keyboard things or anything like this, I always think, why don't I make something that will allow me to use my feet with this, right? Because my feet don't do anything lots of times when I'm playing video games, and that's a real shame.
Yeah.
I should be able to do more with my feet.
Wait, click on your microphone with those again. I want to hear how those sound buttons. Oh, they got a nice click too. I like it. Yeah, I don't know what you're ever gonna use that for. Like, I'm very curious what people use.
It's totally just, you know, for funsies. There's no practical, but man, you wouldn't believe how heavy this thing is. this thing here is almost, well, not quite. This keyboard is heavy as crap, by the way. It is quality. You know, now when you pick up something electronic and it's heavy, you're like, holy shit, they must have really spent a dollar on this thing. Mm-hmm. Yeah, this thing is heavy, but so is this thing. This thing is not going to move. It's got this rubberized bottom on it that you know, kind of grips mm-hmm. really well. Mm-hmm. So this is some good stuff. They call this the dual super buttons.
Oh, look at this.
You know what I could play?
What?
Oh, I bet this would be great for like the track games and stuff. You know where you got to go.
Track and field,
yeah. Great for this, I bet. Yeah, like track and field games. Kind of go.
Do we do track and field on the show? I don't remember if we talked about it. Did we?
We talked about some of the Olympic games, but I don't think we did track and field specific. I think we did the summer.
We need to, dude. There was a whole, we had a whole sub business going where my friend in Woodshop was making custom boards for people to cheat with that game and was charging like $5 a pop for these things. They were like
little
skateboard looking things under your fingers that you would put on the, you know, the arcade machine and go tap, 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 and it would just create like this rap. You would beat the game just, you know, whatever. But he was selling these like little clandestine little cheater boards that he was making.
Nice.
Yeah.
That is awesome. Yeah. We were trying to do it even then, right? Turbo buttons, anything to give us the edge.
Yeah. Especially when you're in junior high or something and you're like, you know what?
Yeah.
Let's just go. This thing I just sent you is somebody's got a version of this thing with a bunch of programmable, like copy, paste, enter.
Right.
And this is the
it comes with a bunch of stickers and you can put it on there. It's got the you can program it to be like a control button, an enter key. Yeah, there's like a bunch of stickers and stuff too, I believe, if I'm not mistaken, right?
Yeah, I think it's annoying that
I haven't looked for it. I
mean, it's annoying to me that Nintendo didn't use this color scheme in the States. I really wish they would have.
Yeah, I love the Famicom. It's closer to white and it's got this really rich red. You know, and NES was trying to be more in line with VCRs at the time, which made no sense because none of VCRs looked like that. So I don't know.
You could probably program those buttons to be like a little fun little contest button, like a game show type thing.
Oh, that's a good idea.
Yep. Somebody on each side of it. You got one on this side, one on this side. And you go, and the question is, how many licks does it take to get to the center of Brian Dunaway's butthole? Bing!
One, two,
right? Two.
One.
Only takes one. That's very cool, dude. I'm jealous of what you have.
I'm so, it's good. You'll have a birthday this year, too, so don't worry about it. Maybe you add something to your wish list and totally forget all about it, and then your family will, surprise you as well.
Yeah, I put my, I currently have a wish list for, let's see. Oh, I don't know why that covered you up. It shouldn't have. There we go. I currently have a list that is full of retro hardware, so I hope somebody will look at my list when my birthday comes around and sees what I've been wishing for. That would be lovely.
Do you have that as your public wish list?
It is public. Yeah,
a shared only.
No, okay. it's a public one.
What do you think about Throne? Have you seen that? You know what I'm talking about?
No. What is it?
As a content creator, people are always wanting to, they want to be able to help out in any way.
Oh, that Throne! I know what Throne is. I have that. Yes, I signed up for it to check it out. It's okay. It's all right.
Yeah, so a lot of us streamers who are, just trying to figure out some way to give people the ability to, support the shows because they love the content we make, and they're always asking us, like, hey, is there anything else I can do? Can I pay you in Bitcoin? Can I do whatever? Throne's are really interesting because it allows you to, like if you need some streaming equipment, like let's say you needed a new stream deck or something, and you can put it on there, and then the community can give, like $10, $15, $1, whatever they want to give, to kind of reach that goal and stuff. It's an interesting concept. So you just get it directly from the store like Amazon or whatever. And just, they're like a middleman. They hold on to the money until you reach your goal. I thought it was interesting.
Yeah. It's I do want one of these though. So thanks for the reminder that it exists. It is now back on my, my wish list. May I one day acquire it.
You one day acquire it. And then we will order 10 of these two button things and we will daisy chain them and we'll play a game. Play a game of tic-tac-toe.
Let's do it. I want to train my dog to use them and say, I want water, I want food. Bing, food. Bing, 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 bing. You ever seen those before? Those are great. They're like these kind of buttons. They have a whole grid on the floor and you train your dog so that it knows if it pushes food, 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 it'll they're hungry.
Oh my God, that'd be so hilarious.
Yep. And sometimes they have like cuss words in there, so it'll be like food now, bitch, bitch, food give now. Me food, bitch. That's pretty good.
Unfortunately, with dogs, that can be confusing, considering there is a word for bitch in the, you know, the canine universe. So
yeah, and they don't know what they're saying, right? Let's see. Yeah. Dog buttons. Let me just see if this is a thing I can buy. Yeah, dog buttons for communication. These are... Oh, yeah, there's tons of these. Tons of these. Like, if you just search for that on Amazon, dog buttons for communication, it's a freaking million of these. Everybody's doing it.
Oh, wow, that's cool.
Yeah.
I'm sitting here flipping around on this 8-bit do thing, and all of a sudden my my computer pops up and goes, there's a new Bluetooth keyboard. Do you want to add it? Wow, that was super freaking simple. Even my Windows was just like, because I accidentally flipped it to the Bluetooth thing.
They know how to get to you.
Yeah, wow, that was kind of cool. I like that. That was some serious slickness.
Yeah, that's nice.
Never plugged up to this computer either.
Well, there you have it.
I'm paranoid.
We've all learned something. Yeah, you should be paranoid. Just a little paranoid about that. It's fine, though. All right.
A little paranoid's good.
Let's get into some real paranoia.
Shall we play a game?
Yep, paranoia in the form of a 1994 hit game called System Shock, developed by Looking Glass Studios and published by Origin Systems before EA chucked that name altogether. This was made for DOS.
Made into a service.
That's true. They did, yeah. And it sucked. MS-DOS, Mac OS, and PC-98.
That it confused me when I saw PC-98 because I forgot that was a thing.
It was
basically a non-IBM but compliant system, mostly sold like in Japan. But yep. Essentially, it's basically another version of something that run MS-DOS. It's not like Windows 98.
No, not at all.
94.
But it is, this thing was a huge hit. This was a gigantic hit, especially on DOS. I remember everybody in the office I worked at the time all bought this game and played it.
It wasn't a financial hit, but the first System Shock. My experience is to roll back a little bit. My first experience with System Shock was System Shock 2, and I thought I had played System Shock 1. I had not, Scott.
No,
my memory was incorrect.
Yeah, one and two are very different from each other. Visually, like fidelity wise, like there's a lot of stuff changed from System Shock 1 to 2. But it is, the sauce is here. The reason people are interested is here, and this was a much deeper kind of experience than something you might get from Doom at the time.
Doom, you have Doom on the brain. It's okay.
Yeah, I think a lot about Doom right now.
Dune.
It's a lot of Dune in my life. The concepts were higher concepts. You had interesting ways of managing inventory. You had a really interesting overarching paranoid, the machines are taking over story kind of thing going on. And there's this AI on the station. You got to get rid of it. It's called Shodan.
Shodan enough, right?
Yep. Mm-hmm. And it was made with nefarious means. It's a little like every story you've ever heard about a machine or a ship taking over because it doesn't like what the humans are doing. It's kind of like that.
This is future. Yeah, this is set in the future. It's cyberpunk. And the team who did this had been previously working on Ultima Underground. We did a little take on the Ultima stuff, and we talked a little bit about Underground just briefly. But they were kind of sick of the fantasy scene. They want to do something in space. Why not cyberpunk? And everybody on this team, everybody who was working on System Shock, the first one, was all like super talented, super self-motivated, and just ready to go, and had this huge, grandiose idea and actually executed on it. Sometimes we talk about games that they like overshoot. They're like, oh, we have this grand idea, and then they fall short. This game doesn't fall short. This game is close to almost creating a Windows type of operating system. So a graphical operating system because of the complexities of what they were creating. This was a time when we're right at the cusp of going from, Windows 3.1 and getting onto Windows 95. And so more of a Windows-based full system, less about running games in DOS, even though this one runs in DOS. And so they're like trying to bridge that gap between 92 and 94 where they're in the development, between concept to actually bringing it to market. And man, they throw everything. And I will say about this game is over-engineered, but that's actually a good thing when you get to 2024 and are looking back and they've made a whole bunch of mods to bring this game that controls like a big clunk. It's just so clunky.
Oh, yeah.
Almost, there's so much keyboard control in this game.
Mm-hmm.
There's very little mouse stuff because, once again, we were in DOS. We were just starting to get, everybody was just now getting mouses everywhere, right?
Yeah.
Everybody
had a unless mouse. Unless you're a Mac user. Sure. If you're a Mac user, you're like, oh, yeah, I've been using mice for years. But this is when PCs were just starting to say, hey, what if we had alternate control methods and you usually had to do some kind of weird driver shit to even make it work. But
There were mouses, but we weren't really big into them. We were also getting at capacity for floppies. So we were moving on to CD-ROMs because we were starting to do things like real rendered 3D graphics, real-time rendered 3D graphics. We were at a crossroads here. And I feel like the developers didn't have any clue, as you would expect, which way technology was going to go. And so they just put all that shit in there. Mm. And it's a very complicated game because of that.
Yeah.
But
it's gotten simpler with the remakes or the remasters, and specifically last year's, the 2023
Night Dive. Right.
Go ahead.
I'm sorry. So Night Dive, who rescued System Shock and System Shock 2, from I believe it was in the hands of an insurance company, probably due to some, I didn't do all the full research on this part yet. Mm. This was such a deep dive. I had no idea how deep this was going to get, but basically, Night Dive rescued the intellectual property and, pulled it out from an insurance company who had it. And so they have been trying to, maintain this by making an enhanced edition, which you can buy on Steam and good old games.
Yeah. So this is what we're looking at right now. For those watching live, this is the enhanced edition from 2015 is the one I'm looking at right now.
Right. There's a couple of versions you don't want to do. You usually like to go back and check all the old shit out. Like this originally released on 9 floppy disk.
Yeah.
Cool. But no, you don't want that. That's not the experience you want. And that's not the experience most people remember. That was just them trying to rush it to market.
Yeah.
It eventually released on CD, did not have mouse look because that wasn't important at the time. We were just a few months away from when Doom came along and they didn't have mouse look out the box either. So it wasn't
Doom
really
was
big
already
thing.
Out, right? Quake was after this. So yeah,
Doom had only been out for like 4 months or something, which is a real bummer. Because I think a lot of what should have been really good sales for this game right out the gate kind of lacked a little bit because there was so many comparisons to Doom at the time. Because Doom, you know, we had never seen anything like Doom. It was changing everything. Mm. Well, you know, we'd seen a little few things, but nothing as big as what Doom was. So
yeah, Doom was. You're right. It was. Let's see, December 10th of 93. So really.
Right.
Barely at the end of 93 and early in 94, you got this game. So yeah, they're very close to each other in terms of, release. Very different approaches though, right? Because Doom's like, pew, 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 kill monsters, move on to the next thing, find the red key. And this game's like, do a bunch of complicated shit that we're not ready for in video games, but one day you're all going to appreciate this and wish there was more of it.
Your kids are going to love it. That's a great comparison. It's that Marty McFly playing the electric guitar at the 1950s, what was it, the prom, the dance or whatever they had in Back to the Future, because your kids are really going to love it. Everything here is what we see in a lot of modern games. And there wasn't even a word for what we've come to know as immersive sim, which is where you're playing a first person game, but you're not necessarily running around trying to shoot stuff like you would in Doom, even though on the box, on the CD box, it's pretty much describes it as a first person shooter. But that's not what this game is.
By the
this
way, one of my favorite ever cover arts for a video game. I love
it. Oh, I love it. It's funny because I always think of it as Cyberpunk, the optometrist visit. That's what it always reminds me of.
It looks like he's checking his eyesight. Absolutely.
Yeah, it looks like he's at the eye doctor getting his eyes checked out. But I'm with you. It's so sensational. It gets you excited. You realize from the cover art, this is absolutely, you know, cyberpunk. It's absolutely about, you know, a meshing of humans and technology. And you get it immediately. Great cover box. You're right.
Absolutely. It's really good. There's something about it. It just gets me going.
Yeah.
Warren Spector may be a name people are familiar with. You would be like, oh, wait, why do I know that guy's name? Well, Warren Spector would go on to build the Deus Ex games, which in a lot of ways are, spiritual successors to this, or at least the initial ones. And those were while he was over at, the one in Texas with Romero and stuff, post Doom, post Quake. What was that called? Had a name. Don't remember. Ion Storm. That's it. Yep. So they were at Ion Storm, and he built Deus Ex Invisible War as well as Deus Ex the original, and was Ion Storm studio director. He oversaw development of everything there. And that included Thief, Deadly Shadows in 04. And then he left to do other stuff because the owners, Ion Storm was closed by the owners, Eidos Interactive, in 2005. You don't hear much from him now. He's kind of gone not dead quiet, but he's a consultant on Underworld Ascendant. He worked on those Epic Mickey games. In fact, that was like a big comeback in 2010 for him, was working at Disney and working on that crazy Mickey painting world game, which never quite hit the mark. They could probably try again now. There's rumors actually they might try again now, but anyway, the guy's an all-star, been around forever.
Yeah.
Important name in video games. This was his baby. And all the other shocks that you were going to get later, the future.
Getting the bios.
Yeah.
Yeah, getting the bios.
What was the other one? There's another one with something shock. Crap. Anyway.
They always start this way, right? All the shock games kind of start the same. It's kind of like we talked last week where the JRPGs all start the same. You know, you wake up in a bed, kind of similar here. You wake up because you've lost consciousness or whatever, and you find yourself in this world that you got to discover a little bit of a time at a time. And that's where this game really set some things, really marked a line that said, okay, going forward, when we do these kind of stories, we're going to have like audio tapes or any type of like oral readings of what things going on. Instead of interacting with NPCs and getting the stories that way, we're going to have where there's stories left behind. Right. And so you've got to uncover what happened. So we're doing a dungeon crawler in space kind of iteration of what Ultima was doing with dungeon crawlers on, in fantasy. Now we're in space and we got to uncover the mystery, who we are, because we don't pour anything into the character other than ourselves. All we know is we're a hacker, right? And that we've turned Shodan. We turned off the ethical part of it for some reason. For some reason, some exec somewhere talked us into turning off the ethical filter. In trade, we get a neural implant that allows us to plug into mini games, essentially, because once you get into this game, after you wake up from your 6-month coma and discover everybody's dead or a mutant or a robot, you've got to go around looting bodies and uncovering tapes and getting oral histories of what's going on. And occasionally you'll have to stop in and jack into a cyber world. This is a 1994 version of Cyber World, by the way. So when you lock into these little mini games, you have to like figure out, have you played this part, Scott? I mean, I don't know if you made it, because you don't necessarily have to go into the cyber world parts early in the game.
I remember them. I don't. I didn't do it in this. I did. I just kind of dabbled this time and then watched a ton of video. But when I was playing this back in the day, I thought this stuff was fascinating because it was totally different than the rest of the game. It felt like you were truly getting sucked into new space or whatever.
Yeah, you had it literally. And so you had to go into you went into these, this wireframe world, this cyber world, and it's all abstract thinking. So like if you have to unlock a med bay door that you can't get to, you'll get in there and you will have to fly around. You're kind of being kind of pushed around while you're in there. But there'll be objects, like there'll be a floating cube. And if you mouse over top of it, it will go, it'll say this is med door. Mm-hmm. And so then you fly over to it and you collect it by running into it, colliding with it. And then that opens the med door. It lets you know. Then you look around and you'll see a way to exit. And so you exit out, or you fatigue out because it's just too mentally taxing. God, it's just too mentally taxing.
Yeah,
I gotta get out of here.
But you can see why this would lead to things like the Deus Ex projects because they were they were this whole idea, you know, hacking the system, creating visualizations of what it meant for data to get somewhere and how the system was coming after you, and that sort of thing became very thematic in all those games as well. Someone in the chat says that he got too much credit at Ion Storm. I disagree, but it is, we would be remiss if we didn't mention Doug Church. This guy is probably the more creative end of the creation of this game. And in this game in particular was like, you know, the game runner, while Spectre was more of overseer, you know, that kind of relationship.
He was the overseer. He was the inspiration for all the corporate shit, right?
It's a little weird, though, that Doug Church kind of stopped making stuff. The last thing he worked on was 2012's Counter-Strike Global Offensive for Valve. And since then, nothing. He just hasn't
been involved. You're not the only ones. So his ability to... So people who work with Doug Church, especially this group of people, they love this guy. There is a great interview on rockpapershotgun.com. And it's an oral history. I love reading the oral histories over there, by the way. They do great stuff. And it's an oral history on System Shock. And everybody on the development team can't understand why he hasn't done more, because he is just a phenomenal person and a huge visionary, and was able to put all of this stuff together because he was the project lead on System Shock. They just don't understand why. And they really feel like he deserves more credit. I don't know. But he's just kind of, you know, he's just doing his thing. He's the Doug Church, man. He does what you hate to see great talent do stuff. But I'm sure there's reasons why he's doing the things he likes. Maybe he doesn't.
Maybe he didn't like it. Maybe he's just bored of it. I don't know. But I, you know, right now, supposedly he's still working on a System Shock 3, and he's doing that with, who is it?
We got some people going back. So we got some art going back on this. You know, the System Shock Night Dive is continuing to, I don't want to say milk. I don't want to say milk, Scott, but maybe milk
kind of milking it.
System Shock.
They're milking it.
They're bringing it to a modern take, because anybody has ever played System Shock, including us this week, you instantly realize there's so much primordial ooze here of every game. And since it's such a complex system, I mean, your keyboard by default is mapped so that you can lean, and not just lean like one way. You can lean and crouch. You can lean, crouch, left, right. You can do all these. You can control every bit of this character that you're doing. So it's over-engineered. But the good news is, if you have some mods, everything is already there. And so you can mod it to function properly with mouse look and everything in a modern system. And it still holds the hell up in that aspect. And it's a lot of fun. And
I didn't know he led the team that made Freedom Force. Did you ever play Freedom Force back in 02?
I did play Freedom Force, and I wanted to revisit it this week, but man, I love Freedom Force. Man, I took one. I saw the System Shock sandwich on the table the other week, and I was like, oh, we need to do that. And I picked up and took one bite, and I'm like, oh my God, this thing is huge.
No, it's a big sandwich. You got to put half of it in the fridge or share it with a friend or something. It's a lot.
Jesus.
Yeah, it's a lot.
I was going to we're going to do System Shock 1 and 2 and maybe talk a little bit about, I was worried. I was like, there's not going to be enough here, but God,
no, there's so much.
It's so freaking deep. And I didn't realize how it did it. We could have a 3-hour show on this. We're definitely going to miss some things about System Shock. The good news is the people who love it really love it. And most of the people haven't even played it. So,
and the 2013,
not the first one.
The 2013 game, by the way, is awesome. Play it.
I love so you're talking about the enhanced edition?
No, that's 2015. So in 2023, right. Hold on, let me find that.
Oh, 2023, the new one, the very new one.
Yeah, the newest remake-y thing. It's not System Shock 2 though, is it? Hold on.
No, it's just called System Shock.
Yeah, that's
they
right.
It's because the reason why is because it literally is System Shock. It's the first one, same settings, same story. Just they spread the story out a little bit. So instead of having this, this intro, which I love from the early 90s, where you got this talkovers like, it's the year 2097 and blah, blah,
here,
blah.
I'll play some for you. You want to hear some? Here's some. I got some. Yeah, right here.
Give me some juice.
Here's some old. Juice. This is the old school intro. Here you go.
New Atlanta, Sector 11, Building 71G, 7 April 2072.
You know what? The one thing about this game is really notable. People are constantly talking.
Oh, God. So much talking.
There's all this, like, robot talk. The AI's talking to you. A guy's on the radio going, we can't see it. We can't do it. It's just, like, constant, like, you can hear that guy? Listen to him.
I check it out myself, but my rat count's way high this month.
It's just so, like, you know, over-the-top auditory assault. But I remember at the time going, oh, I don't, you know, games don't sound like this. Like, it was really impressive. I think that's the CD version of it, though, because the disc version had a lot of MIDI and replacement sounds and stuff.
Yeah, the nine disc, the original floppy disc that was released does not have any voiceovers, and it's got, you know, more compressed audio stuff. So the reason why this is such an audio assault is because local band, local to Looking Glass, was the band, the 90s band Tribe. And Greg LaPiccolo, I think that's how you say it.
That's French for the piccolo, right? French for the piccolo.
The piccolo, that's right.
Yeah.
Right. And so I think he was the first one that got involved. Anyway, one of those in the Tribe band, the 90s Tribe band, got in there and they got hooked up, and then they brought in the rest of the band, including Janet LaValle, who I think that's who was just listened to, because she turns into Shodan eventually.
Mm-hmm.
She's the lead singing, and maybe
she is. I used to have a crush on her big time.
Right.
Look at this chat.
Oh, absolutely. And so, it gets, it's such an assault. It's a time of when we have stuff like Tool and, you know, electronic dance music. We got, you got your industrial music, and that just plays right along with this, you know, this dirty, dingy satellite, space. Was a space satellite around Saturn, which is where we're at. I don't know if we even discussed yet. Have we even discussed the location?
No, I don't think we have. I don't think so.
We're originally, as hackers, on Earth, and we're hacking into a corporate system, and we get busted, and they make a deal with us. One of the VPs makes a deal with us, and we end up going to, you know, to Saturn, and we're orbiting around Saturn in this little, you know, space station, and we've got it's very claustrophobic. This game was meant to be immersive sim with horror elements,
mm-hmm.
right?
Mm-hmm.
And so, yeah, and the sound just enhances all of that. We've got, it's an assault on the senses, though. It's a little bit much sometimes.
Yeah.
A little bit much.
This game was just on sale for 50% off the new one, the remake in 2023. Yeah. It was on sale for like $15.
$20.
Or something.
$15-$20. I think that's usually when it goes on sale. And yeah. I enjoyed it. And really, I mean, you can pretty much get the whole story and the full experience and a little bit more by getting the most recent shiny, slick looking System Shock. If you want to experience that mouse look, it's more, you know, it's more friendly to modern gaming, but it still covers the whole story.
Yeah.
I really like the original System Shock, but it's an assault on the senses between the really bright color palettes, which is really kind of cool. There's ambient lights. There's objects actually have light that radiate out of them,
mm-hmm.
which is really unusual. But everything is really well lit for the most part, even if it's a little bit busy.
Busy is fair way of putting it. Yeah. Yeah.
Busy. Especially if you take the berserk. If you take the berserk, everything goes that. You ever solarize a picture where you like invert the colors and everything?
Oh yeah, all the time.
There's like an inversion of color palette when you take the berserk, mm-hmm. and it impacts how you can see, and it actually makes you kind of berserk, and you're kind of badass a little bit. I like that a lot.
Yeah, I like that stuff too.
We haven't even talked about you know, the inventory system, picking up weapons, you know, and picking up the ammo for it. And oh my God, this game, like I said, we could go on for weeks talking about the genius that is System Shock and all of the paths that it paved for games coming like Half-Life.
All of that stuff. Think about some of your favorites. Half-Life. Another good one is like, the shock games, Infinite and BioShock 1 and 2 and all that. But what's the one?
Yeah, yeah.
Prey? Yeah, Prey by Arkane. The Arkane Prey game. Prey. Very, very reminiscent of the vibe of this game, the series. And highly recommend that one. Oh, I'm going to have to go finish this. So I started the System Shock reboot and never finished it. Just got busy. Mm-hmm. Last year was a crazy year for games. This thing reviewed so well. It was getting like 9s out of 10s. And I was like, I'm going to get it. And I got it. And I started playing. I'm like, oh, this is so good. And then I got busy with like Baldur's Gate and everything else that came out.
Oh, Jesus.
And I just haven't gotten back to it. So I think I'm in the mood now. I'm going to go play this game.
Yeah.
That's what I'm going to do.
I would, if you're old school head like I am, the Enhanced Edition came out in 2015. Mm-hmm. And it is just pretty much, that was Night Dive's first swing at this. And all it really does is it brings in higher resolution, gives you the mouse look. It took some of the mods, which you can get a lot of mods off moddb.com. Mm-hmm. I talked about that in the past. And you can roll your own if you want to. But why? Because the Enhanced Edition looks like the original, but modifies it in very minute ways that makes it much more playable. If you get this off Steam, I can verify there because that's where I played it at. You can play it in classic mode. You can play it in DOSBox, essentially. And you have a lot of options, widescreen supports. You can redefine the controls so that you can, instead of using. So we hadn't got to the WSAD in gaming, right? But but what they used was an ASDX. Mm. So it's very similar to a WSAD, but it shifted a little bit, which kind of caused some muscle memory confusion for me, but I figured it out eventually. And when you control like the lean and stuff, you kind of shift your hand like left and you use your RFV, I believe it is, and TGB to be able to crouch and lean and stuff. It takes a long time to learn it, but once you learn it, it's pretty cool. If I was playing it today and you're worried, it's like, I want to play a retro game and I want it to be true to the source. 2015 is pretty true to the source. We get some quality of life improvements of stuff you wouldn't really miss. Stuff like bullshit, no mouse look. In the new one, you just hit the E button and it toggles between the mouse look and inventory control, screen control, HUD control, which is important. Because when I was playing this first time, I was like, oh, no mouse look. I hate this shit. But then I realized, oh, this is very Ultima because you've got to be able to click on screen to, pick up objects and put it to your inventory and move around in your inventory. Yeah. And I'm like, if they had built that with the mouse look to begin with, it would have been very confusing. But they found a nice little toggle way to do it in the modern one that lets you do it. But I really like that. Now, if you really want to be old school, I tried to talk Scott. And I knew nothing about this until I started digging through the manual for System Shock. There's Terminal? I think System Shock Terminal or something what it's called. Mm. It's a huge manual. It's really worth reading if you're planning on playing this game because it'll set up a lot of stuff for you.
Yeah, and there's a PDF pages. On, let's see, archive.org's got I think they even have the big fat manual for the new game in here.
Yeah, I think they do. But I had never heard of Cyberman. And I was like, what the hell is a Cyberman? Because it said you could play it with a joystick. It said you could play with keyboard. But if you want a better experience, you can also add in a joystick. And the Cyberman, brand new Cyberman. I'm like, what the Cyberman?
Yeah.
And so I looked it up. It's a Logitech device. It's called the Cyberman 3D Serial Gaming.
Oh, I remember that thing. Yeah. Yeah.
I knew nothing about this thing. I only see one on eBay. And the pricing that unreasonable. And they actually got the guy. Actually, I was watching it and the guy sent me a thing and said, how about now? I'll tell you what, I'll make you a deal. And I'm like, you son of a butthole. You know, I'm a retro controller junkie. Why get off me? Mm-hmm. And, but essentially it's a mouse with kind of like a palm control on top of almost like
it's weird.
Like a shuffle kind of thing. Like how you see some of these thumbsticks they don't actually like roll around. They actually like get pushed around the slide thumbstick.
Yeah,
so it's kind of like a slide thumbstick for your palm.
A little bit. It's like, for me, the whole thing reminded me of like, what if a mouse and a flight stick had a baby? This was basically it.
Yeah.
Cyberman was weird.
It was a weird thing.
Yeah.
It's cool, but it's got that old Logitech flight stick base, that big base they used to have. And then it's got like, it's the mouse sitting on top of it and got your little three buttons on top and a little joy bump, I guess, on the top, whatever
that is. Joy bump, yeah. Hell yeah. Hell yeah. I love a joy bump. this stuff, plus like the Microsoft Sidewinder, there's like a bunch of weird shit back then that stuff's fascinating. I don't want to go to eBay and spend a bunch of money on it all, but I wish I'd have kept it all because I had most of this stuff, including the Cyberman. I had this for a while.
Yeah.
It was good for three games, by the way. There were like three games that used it well and then forget it. It was kind of a waste.
Absolutely. Yeah, that was pretty much it. Because once again, we were in that era where everything was changing. We were going to, you know, Windows 95, and we were becoming more dependent on our mouses. We were moving into CD-ROM technology. Everything was changing. And why not? It's like, oh, yeah, mouse is cool, but it has a lot of problems. Everybody was trying to rethink the mouse when it pretty much wasn't even on everybody's desk yet.
No, we were still trying to figure out what the F was going on. It's like that one I showed on the show before.
Right.
I don't have it here anymore, but the one with the Honeywell with the two disks underneath it.
Yeah.
So instead of a ball, instead of an optical thing, which would come later, it was these two little weird disks, and it was so cool compared to a ball. But then optical comes along and we're just like, well, what are we doing? Of course we're going to go optical. And then laser, like we're going to do that. That's going to be the future. So I'm sorry, Honeywell, your idea was cool and all, but that wasn't going to last.
Yeah, that branch died. But man, I love anybody who's actually wants to get around to playing System Shock. It is the old ones are really inaccessible for most modern gamers because it's you got to relearn everything, and it feels so backwards, right? Oh, yeah. Because we figured out a lot of stuff along the way.
Yeah, you're going to have some nostalgia for it. It's like a lot of games. You know, some games hold up better than others, but especially this era, there's a real block between what you remember loving and how it actually plays now. So I'm with Brian. Start with the 2015 one if you want the retro experience. You're going to have a better time if you want to experience it in a brand new kind of shiny way. Play that 2023 game. It's really good. Highly recommend.
I not to criticize Night Dive because they've done an amazing. They do what I love, which is they've preserved a game and then gave it quality of life improvements. So I love Night Dive for that. But honestly, I feel like they kind of maybe should have started with System Shock 2. Mm. I think they could have gotten more traction with doing stuff there because they tried to preserve a little too well. You know, that first one was pretty cool, but I wish they had went and been a little bit more adventurous with the new System Shock. Yeah. I still love it. It is amazing because System Shock deserves it. It's a cool little story. And hit my nostalgia a little bit, even though I didn't really play it that much, but it definitely feels like a game of that era.
Sure.
And the levels that this thing is made from is insane. Mm. It is so easy to get lost in this game. It's a Metroidvania of sorts, even though Metroidvania wasn't even really a thing in 94. Mm-hmm. There's a lot of backtracking. You got to unlock something and you got to backtrack to get back to where you was at. It's a really fun game. System Shock I'm not going to say fun. I'm going to say it's not a very addictive game because there's such an investment.
There's such an investment
to get involved.
You got to lock in. You got to lock in and be serious about it when you're playing that game. Good news though.
You will be greatly rewarded.
I think two's on its way. They're going to remake that whole thing before three comes out. That's the plan. So.
Yeah, like I said, I think they would have had more success if they had just focused on two because there's going to be such a fervor around two. Because that's what everybody played. Like 160,000 copies of the original. I mean, over the years, it's kind of one of those things where it become a cult classic and it just keeps selling and people pick it up and put it in their library and then they go to play it and they go like, oh, shit, I don't know what the hell this is. This is not System Shock 2 at all. Mm. I don't know. But Night Dive, it's awesome.
Yeah, it's cool. I'm glad somebody's keeping the hope alive, man. That's what you want.
Right.
Go check out Steam and GOG for the original stuff. You can emulate it, of course. You can do it on real hardware if you want. And like we said, the remake is real good.
How far did you make it in the first one? You said you played a little bit and then you watched some videos.
Here recently, I didn't get very far at all. It was just 16. Too clunky for me. Too old and clunky.
Yeah, it's very clunky. I think 16 hours to complete if you just like run through and you pick up tapes and you learn stuff along the way. By the way, we didn't talk about everything pretty much being 3D rendered real time, except for A lot of like robots, all the monsters and stuff are sprites like Doom. So and all the dead parts, all the dead bodies and stuff that you're looting along the way, those are all just they're just sprites that rotate. And it's a really smart game. It's just a really smart game.
Yeah, it's very good. It's considered a classic for a reason.
Yeah.
And I think it has, you know, almost cult status at this point.
Absolutely, especially Shodan. I mean, even if you've never played the first one, you know who Shodan is. Because
big time. Too, and she's back doing the, she did last year's and three. She's doing the voice again from Tribe, that lady.
Yeah, yeah.
Forgot her name.
Tribe already. Lady.
Tribe Lady. What was her name?
She's the Tribe Lady.
Terry Brosius, right?
Terry, no, it was Janet. Janet. Terry is the keyboard bassist, right?
No, Terry Brosius is...
Maybe you're right. Maybe it is Terry. I always get it confused between Terry and Janet.
Yeah, here it is right here. She's Terry... System Shock's Shodan voice, it says right here.
There you go. See, you got it. Yep. See, I might have said Janet earlier.
Yeah. And Terry sounds like it could be a dude, but it's a lady.
Yeah. Could be either way.
She's in all their games. She was in System Shock 2, of course. She was in Thief 2, Thief Deadly Shadows, Deus Ex Invisible War. She kind of just stuck with these guys.
Yeah. Tribe didn't do a lot more after their little initial success. They had a couple of, one or two albums that did pretty well, and they all got into video games. So yeah, I'm down with that. But I didn't listen to much to Tribe. Did you listen to much Tribe growing up?
No, I don't remember hardly anything from them. I remember the band a little bit, and I remember having a crush on the singer, and that's it.
I fired it up this past week. Oh my God, the soundtrack is amazing. Yeah. Definitely pick up the soundtrack. And I listened to one of their albums, their big albums from, I think, 92 or 91 or so. Mm. I felt it. There's one song in System Shock that is like, sounds so much like Tool and all those bands at that time. It's 100% industrial type music, which is so perfect for cyberpunk.
I love Tool. Tool was great because you could always count on a little naked Asian guy covered in ash in a corner of a room. You know, you could always count on that. That was just a thing you would get.
You could totally count on
it. It's like, what am I in the mood for? How about a little naked Asian man? And what if the world is so dark and horrible that he's just covered in like an inch of ash from who knows what? And he's just over there blinking the ash away from his eyelids in the corner looking all freaked out. That's Tool for me. Tool always
so
wins.
Cool.
Yeah. Tool.
Oh my gosh. Tool. We didn't.
What? Sorry. Go ahead.
So I love like the videos where they do the stop motion Tool videos and stuff. That was era. So like I love that stuff. But also this game, we didn't even get to talk about the amazing physics in this game, that it moves in a very realistic way. Because they had on staff somebody who was amazing at it.
The bummer is the original enemies were all still sprites, kind of like crumpled on the floor like Doom style.
Yeah.
That's fine. Yeah. That's what we expected then. But
it was fine because it didn't bother me that much, because most of the time you don't run into this is not like Doom. So that was one of the biggest hurdles they had to overcome trying to sell this game, is to tell people this is not Doom. This is not a fast first person shooter. It's more, you know, stealthy, walk around, try to lure an enemy to you so that you can lean around a corner and, you know, shoot them. And, you know, I got to be very protective of your health and your stamina, because you've got to manage all of that. A lot of management of the character you're playing as, and not all about just running headlong into, you know, screaming enemies and shooting. Not that at all. Yeah. Not that at all.
No, that's not the game you're playing.
Yeah.
Yeah.
It's not the game you're playing.
Who made...
Which is good, because it's supposed to be horror, and I prefer a slow buildup in my horror game, because that was kind of what they wanted from the beginning.
Right.
Is something that would be immersive and have you on edge with this creepy music. You're out in space. No one hears you scream when you're in space, Scott.
Yeah, nobody can hear you.
Except for Shodan. She hears you, and then she laughs.
Yeah, she's kind of a butthole. I always think Future Shock is part of the series. It's not. It's that Terminator game.
It's got shock in it.
Yeah, it just has the word shock in it. It's got Future Shock. I always thought they were part of the Shock games. 1995, I think.
Yeah.
Terminator, Future Shock. It's all right.
Yeah. And if you want to dig deeper into the history of System Shock, there is no lack of people who go deep into the lore deep into the development, deep into theories about things. People who love this game really love it, and I see why after spending a week on the ship trying to work my way through corridors and you know, tunnels and flipping buttons and just, you know, it's saving constantly.
Yeah.
You got to save. If you don't save, you'll be so pissed.
Yeah, what are you doing if you're not saving? Progress. Freaking save your damn progress, you weirdos.
Save it again. Save it again. Save it some more.
F5 these days.
Don't die.
Or no, F5? Yeah, F5 save these days. Well, there you go. Let's play a little game. Let's see if we can remember games of old by playing this game here.
Destroy it.
This is a little game we call Guess Our Game. We take something old and we play it, and then we try to guess what it is. We have five possible answers. We do it as a what do you call it? Multiple choice now. And
what do they call it when you got multiples of the choices?
The choices when you got more than one. I think it's multiple choice. So I'm going to start with telling you both the platform and the year. It is the Dreamcast, Sega Dreamcast. You might be familiar with that. And
I have one back behind me, and I want to revisit it. I miss it dearly.
Do you have it plugged in right now, or what are you running back there?
I do have it plugged in. Right now, I'm looking at my Sega Genesis 201 cart, and I'm looking at my GameCube emulator on my Wii, I've got my Saturn back there, but it is plugged in through an Saturn. My Dreamcast is plugged into HDMI, but I don't think it's plugged into my Switch right now.
It's unfortunate.
When I say Switch, I mean HDMI Switch.
You mean HDMI Switch, not the Nintendo Switch, which can be confusing.
Not Nintendo Switch, correct.
No.
Sue you, baby.
Yeah, screw you. Sue you is what we're trying to say.
Sue you.
Well, the year was 2000. The platform was Dreamcast, and I'm going to play the audio, and then I'll give you your choices. All right? So here you go.
All right.
Check it out.
Your identification number is WKD4496. Welcome to your new home.
We caught her trespassing in our Paris lab facility 10 days ago. She apparently infiltrated the complex looking for her lost brother, one of the surviving members of RPD's famous STARS teams.
All right, any guess it? Well, don't guess. I'll give you the options. You ready? It is either A, Power Stone.
Yeah.
These are all actual year 2000 Dreamcast games, so I'm keeping it nice and, you know, in the same little zone here. A, Power Stone. B, Expendable. C, R.E. Code Veronica. Or D, Blue Stinger.
So we did Code Veronica a few episodes back. And when I say a few, I mean like probably 50 or so. And I purchased this off of eBay, the full Dreamcast edition, one of the few original Dreamcast games I have. It's not Power Stone. It's not Expendable. It kind of feels like Blue Stinger, which is D, but I'm going to have to say C, Code, Resident Evil, Code Veronica.
Let's see if that is correct. It is 100% correct, Brian. Nicely done.
Yes.
I cut out their names, though, because like in this thing here, let me turn this up.
The surviving
patient number is 6.
We caught her trespassing in our Paris lab facility 10 days ago. She apparently infiltrated the complex looking for her lost brother.
And then I skipped ahead because I'm not going to say Chris Redfield or you're going to go, oh, yeah, I'm freaking Resident Evil. Yeah.
Well, I knew when it said looking for brother, found it. I was like, yeah, I know what this is. I'm like, I got it.
Yep.
Locking it in.
You are correct. That is well done. You got it. It is Code Veronica available at one point for the Dreamcast. It was a launch title. People forget that. It's a thing you could get on day one.
Yeah, it was. Matter of fact, you could get a really cool special edition Code Veronica Dreamcast, which I really would love to have. It's so beautiful. You ever seen it?
No, I don't think I have.
Oh, it's so sexy. Look up Dreamcast. Oh, look at this. I'm using my new keyboard, my 8-bit Duke keyboard. I just accidentally hit it, and I was like, oh, it's hooked up. That's right. I didn't hook it up earlier. Code Veronica Dreamcast is a beautiful Dreamcast version.
I'm looking at it here.
Let's see. Dreamcast. Bundle.
Oh, yeah. Look at that.
Yeah, it's nice. That's that Code Red Veronica. Look at that thing.
I like that a lot. That is hot. I would. Yeah. That would be a proud addition to anyone's shelf. Look at that thing.
I'd be a proud papa.
Yeah, look at that controller too. All translucent, like the 90s were back or something. Yeah.
Mm-hmm.
Jellyfish.
Got that great. It's got nice trimmed out with this nice darker gray, like this smoke gray maybe, and it's got the VMU units in there. Look at that. Oh, that is so sexy. I'd take two, please. I think it was another one too. Like, wasn't there like a blue version as well that they sold? I can't remember.
It wasn't anyway, for Code Veronica though, right? It was something else.
No, was it? I thought that was Stars themed. I think it was still Code Veronica, but I think it was Stars themed. And then there was, I can't remember exactly. It's been a while since I looked, but I loved that. Crap. Oh, I missed that. I think this might have been all in Japan.
That whole device was rad. So cool.
Yep. Built in. The power supply was on the inside, right? Or yeah. Outside.
Yeah. Nicely done. I don't know. Brian, tell me about your deal here. What you got? You got a button or you got a thing to play, but I have no idea what this is. What's the year and platform?
All right. So I went back since I got my NES 8-bit do keyboard this week. I was jonesing for some NES and I looked at a few of my carts and tried to decide what I might pick from this week. And so if you'll play that that music, I will, or that audio, I will give you some choices.
All right. What was our date? 1990. Okay.
Oh, I'm sorry. Yes, the NES from 1990, right in the, is this kind of like in the middle of the life cycle? Maybe a little late in the life cycle?
Yeah, a little late. Yeah. If you count Japan, it's definitely late. But anyway.
Right. Definitely late for that. Yeah.
We'll see what we got.
Your choices are going to be, there's no voice work here, so I'll talk over a little bit. A, Crystalis. It's not Crystal, but Crystalis. Crystalisis? Yes, it. B, Little Nemo, the Dream Master. C, Star Tropics. Or D, Wampum.
Crystalis or Star Tropics are my narrowed down here. Damn. Something about this is ringing a bell. Here, see. Why is that so familiar? Okay.
Everything on the NES.
Yeah. That might be it, actually. I am so tempted to say Star Tropics, but I'm going to say Crystalis. These all sound like fake drinks. Can I get a pint of Whoop'em and some Star Tropics? And if you got some Crystalis back there, I'd drink that. Maybe not Little
Nemo.
Actually,
I started out this week. I was going to do Little Nemo, the Dream Master. So you can mark that off. It's not B.
Yeah.
Is it C, Star Tropics? So no, even though I do have that in my collection, it was also one I was thinking I wanted to do. But I think we already did Star Tropics.
Yeah.
Is it Crystalis?
Oh.
No.
Oh.
This is Wampum. If you listen to the music, it's got a little bit of that stereotypical Native American kind of audio to it. So it's kind of like going, the kind of thing there. And yes, it's very much a Native American looking a character.
Yeah, check
and
it out.
They called it Wampum. I'm like, are you serious?
Wow.
Wampum?
Wow.
With some Indian imagery, some Native American imagery.
Yeah, well done, guys. Well done. You did it. You embarrassed everybody.
Thank you, Japan, for taking our stereotype of Native Americans and running with it.
Yeah, why not?
Amazing platform.
Yeah, we do it with them all the time. We enjoyed a Japanese stereotype here and there. So, so why not? You know, why not? I say. Wow, that's wild, dude. Did not play that. I didn't even know that existed. That's a new game to me.
I had no idea until this week, but it actually looks pretty fun. It looks pretty fun, even though I don't know how I feel about the rest of it, but it's just interesting.
Wampum. Yeah. How? Pff.
Wampum.
Sounds like,
I know, right?
It's like the thing you put in the peace pipe that I'm going to smoke in your teepee, you know?
Right.
You want to smoke them, wamp them? See, that's what people would say.
Exactly. Yeah. Like I said, they took every, and it's not their fault. It's not their fault. They got, you know, they get that American movies and TV, and it's like, wamp them style. So, yeah, they're like, okay.
Open wamp them style.
Wamp them style.
All right. Well done. Brian wins this week's competition, which is, that's great. That's good. You should have won it. He did really well. But now I have to read the.
Yeah, I had to go all the way to bad stereotypes to stump you. You're
well
welcome.
Done. Reach way, way down.
Welcome to the treasure room.
Time for some correspondence from our listeners, 801-471-0462. Get you a text or a voicemail, and one of those is a text, and I'm going to read it right here. Listening to Play Retro, the Chrono Trigger versus Final Fantasy VI thing. I was growing up when those came out. I always like to ask what somebody's third favorite JRPG is from that time. You'll start to get interesting answers because those are usually either one or two. Yeah, that's true. Those two were kind of head-to-head all the time. So if you were fighting over Final, if you really believe Final Fantasy VI, or I guess we would have known it as three because they weren't numbered right yet here in the States.
Right, right.
But anyway, if that was the one you were losing your mind over, then Chrono Trigger probably looked like a Johnny Come Lately. But if you love Chrono Trigger, you were happy to tell the venerable Final Fantasy series to stick it where the sun don't shine. You know, that was a fun, I remember that was like a fun little mini game. Like everybody hated Sega and Nintendo, but guess what? If you're all in on Nintendo, maybe you were hating on one of these two games, and that's fine. That's why we are when you're young, you're stupid. That's what you do.
And even when I'm old, I'm still stupid.
Yeah, I'm still a little stupid. Maybe not in this way, but still stupid.
Not in this way. My third favorite. What is your third favorite? Did you say what your third favorite JRPG from that time was?
Well, he didn't, but if I had one, third favorite,
because it's kind of tough for me, because then we start getting into Persona, which I didn't play a lot of, but definitely the Chrono Trigger series I never really played, but then I played some of that. I didn't really get into Final Fantasy until later, but now it's one of my favorites.
Series, I'd probably say the Mana games, but those aren't really, they're not turn-based, so they don't count. I mean, I still think they can.
Right.
They're action-based. Golden Sun, of course. Jerry Tolbert is correct. Golden Sun is the correct answer. Those are later, though. That's not Super NES. Doesn't quite count, right?
Right.
SNES came first, so if you're saying a SNES fight, I don't think I can use that one. So I'll say Secret of Mana. But Golden Sun on the GBA, chef's kiss, baby.
Chef's kiss.
One and two. Those games are great. Xenogears, that's a good one. There's plenty of good ones.
Yeah.
Let's get to an email. PlayRetroShow@gmail.com. This came from Alan.
Alan!
He says this.
Alan!
Recently found the podcast and I am loving it. As a former WWIV BBS sysop, I feel duty-bound to ask, any plans to review any of the old text-based BBS door games like Food Fight or Trade Wars 2002? Says Alan. P.S. Ooh. Dr. Sabatso was the original ChatGPT. I don't disagree.
OG ChatGPT. Oh, that's right. Yeah. Doctor. Yeah, that's a good point. Yep. And welcome our WW4 BBS sysop. I want to see Trade Wars.
Okay.
Alan.
Let's do Trade Wars.
Trade Wars. I did hit that a little bit. I hit that. Did not quit. I don't think I ever played Food Fight. But Trade Wars definitely had some experience there.
Yeah, so Trade Wars 2002, it was called. And there is still a website called TradeWars.com. If you go there, you will see a very ancient ass looking website. It was released in 90 or 86 originally.
Yes. This is bringing back some nostalgia for me.
Yeah, look at this chat. Look at this old ass screen. Yeah,
look at that.
Yeah, that's awesome.
How to do it today. Ooh, we're going to set up your own BBS. Look at this. What is this? Okay.
I know. That sounds like something you would do. Something you would do.
Oh, my God. I actually did visit this first amendment back when we first started. We need to find a way to tackle this.
Yeah, let's cover some of this stuff. I think the BBS era is fascinating, and a lot of people don't even know about it. Like, it's a weird thing. It's a weird time. So let's bring the kids in. Let's show them the old ways someday.
Look at the old ways.
All right, Alan, you've convinced us. We're doing it. Well done. All right, Brian, we got to do one of these real quick because that's what we do now.
Ludicrous kill.
Time to talk about the Unreal Report. Is anything, I have not been able to play all week, so I know my numbers haven't changed, or if anything, they're worse because someone's beaten me now.
So. Right. To go to the Unreal Tournament 99, top five right now, retrogib.com, you'll find out that Upright Knight has moved to 1, 2, Flapjackson, 3, Denier, 4, Surge, and 5, Secrecy, or as I call Sick Recce, is still managing to hold into the top five. Scott has fallen down to 7 after I played this past Monday while he was doing the Monday show, spending time with his family. Yeah. I was racking up kills and have moved into 6th place, Scott, at
See, I'm not going to be. How do I expect my stuff to stay if I don't get in there and fight for it? I have to fight for it.
That's right. You got to fight for it. However, Scott's been a little bit more faithful on the 2K4. And so at number one, Sick Recce, secrecy, Try to Kill Everyone. Number two, 3, Brack Flack, 4, Frog Pants, and 5, Shock Effect. I'm right on your butt. You better watch it. If you nap on it, if you take a coma nap for 6 months, I'm definitely going to overtake you, Scott.
Okay.
And you'll be out of there.
All right. You know what? I'll get back on the train. I just have been so busy, I haven't had a chance, and I haven't been able to play 2K4 either. Yep. Anything change in there as well? Like any other positional changes?
No positional changes on the TK4. Like I said, Sick Recce, I think Try to Kill Everyone might have been number one until about 2 weeks ago. And I think Secrecy moved up to number one. And I think Brag Flag may have moved up a little bit. We're still in the top five. Flap Jackson is hovering at six, trying to eat my lunch. And I'm just not having it. And of course, Shane Shave Maddox at six. And Sutranu has moved up to number 8 and is going to try to give us a little hand from time to time with the maps. And can I just say, Dr. Calhoun is in the chat room, and yeah. I'll go ahead and say, was number 9. Look at that. Still in the top 10. And 10 is, he's Wombat. We'll be playing. Just got a message actually from Amy. That's Red Fraggle online. She has bracketed us for tonight for the K4 points.
Oh, yes. Okay. I'm all in on that. Let's do it.
She's put us in two teams. Team A is going to be Red Fraggle. This is happening probably like an hour after we get through here so that Scott has time enough to edit the show and post it.
Yep.
Team A is going to be Red Fraggle, Frog Pants, Shock Effect, Dr. Tolbert, and Team B is going to be Racer 951, Sick Recce, Dr. Calhoun, and Briscoe. And we'll be trying to do a little assaulting tonight.
I was wondering who was getting Sick Recce, dude. We're going to die to his hand.
Yeah. It's going to be bad.
He's really good. Anyway, looking forward to that. All right. That's it for your emails and texts and stuff. Again, 801-471-0462 or playretroshow@gmail.com are the places to get a hold of us. Also, our next discussion is going to be asteroids, Brian.
Asteroids. Oh yeah.
My dad had two. We had a sit down asteroids, cocktail asteroids. I had a big stand up one in the garage. All my friends begged me to come over all the time. They want to play asteroids. I had an asteroids deluxe for a little while. This is the thick of my dad owns arcade time for me. And I played a ton of asteroids in the day. To this day, still a thing I would love to just go throw a quarter in and play. I love asteroids. So we're going to talk about it. Asteroids deluxe. Blastroids, okay, which a lot of people forget about that, but that was the third in line really of these asteroid games, and I still say to this day some of the best time in old arcade vector days. This stuff's so good, dude.
I'm really no good at asteroids, but I do look forward to trying to configure my system so that I can make this true to the original and how I experienced it. I'm going to have to get up my retro fight stick. Was asteroids a dial or was it a ball or was it just a buttons. Stick? I'm trying to remember.
Just buttons.
I've been so long since I've played it. So it was just buttons. So I've got plenty of buttons on that thing. So I'm going to try. Ooh, maybe I can even do with some buttons on my NES controller. I don't know. By the way, also, Amy corrected me. Secrecy or Sick Recce is her. She. So there you go.
That's not her.
See?
Oh, it is a her.
That's what Amy said.
No, I thought you meant it was Amy. It's not Amy.
No, Amy is not Sick Recce.
Yeah,
Amy
that's what I'm saying.
Is correcting my how I had.
I have no doubt that whatever gender, that's awesome. Just saying it sounded like you're saying she was secretly Sick Recce and I was going to be blown away by this news.
In the game, there may be genders. And I think I had picked one, but it was just an aesthetic choice. Moving quickly through that stuff because once you get in game, it's kind of hard to tell what anybody is.
Yeah, it doesn't matter anyway.
We did play Fathead or Big Head on Monday on UT99, which is mutator.
Yeah.
It's a mutator. And you get fatter as you kill more and you get skinnier as you kill less. Let's just say many people noticed that I resembled a droid, Roger from Star Wars, about halfway through the game. That's how anemic my character was.
Wow, you were a little thin droid, and that's funny. I always remember that mutator being a good way to try to keep things equal because, you know, if you got hit a lot, it meant you would get small. And if you got, if you were doing really well, you get big and easier target for those who needed to climb the ladder. It's actually a pretty cool way of doing that.
Hitbox got a little larger. Yeah.
As you noticed,
Tonda was a chubby character.
Oh, of course he was, because Tonda, that's what Tonda does. I'm sending Tonda you a
rides
thing.
Rides that beast.
Whoops, that's the wrong place. Where did I send this? Sorry. I meant to send it to you and I put it in the main Discord. This is the layout for Asteroids Control. So you had left.
It was buttons right, for rotate.
Yep, thrust, fire, and then you had a hyperspace button, which, can I just make a recommendation? Don't use the hyperspace button. You'll die. You'll just die. Don't do it. That thing is a get out of jail kind of final choice kind of thing, but it never works out.
Yeah.
It sucks.
When that asteroid's right in your face and it's like, oh, shit, and you just hit it, right? That's what you got to do. Ooh, I could turn these into the hyperspace buttons on my keyboard. That'd be brilliant.
Yeah, put them under your feet. Smack them with your feet. Yeah, I like it. That's going to do it for us. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. If you'd like to support us on Patreon, there'd be no reason for you not to. In fact, you could join really great folks like Scott McKeon, Brehan, or Brahan, Dave Verwer. He's also in there. You'll never get commercials. You get pre-show content every week. Why wouldn't you sign up? Well, there's no reason. Go read about it and sign up today at patreon.com/playretro. Big thanks, everybody, for listening. Go play something retro. And we'll see you next time.
Get more at frogpants.com.
Selling a little or a lot? Shopify helps you do your thing however you cha-ching. Shopify is the global commerce platform that helps you sell at every stage of your business. From the launch your online shop stage to the first real-life store stage, all the way to the did we just hit a million orders stage, Shopify is there to help you grow. Shopify helps you turn browsers into buyers with the internet's best converting checkout. 36% better on average compared to other leading commerce platforms. Because businesses that grow, grow with Shopify. Get a $1 per month trial period at shopify.com/work. Shopify.com/work.
Hey everyone, Craig Robinson here. I want you to check out the Ways to Win podcast, brought to you by Ford and the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. On Ways to Win, Coach Cal and I will discuss leadership lessons we've learned. We know all about the days spent perfecting your craft outside of the limelight and have knowledge to share about how strength, inspiration, encouragement, and adaptability are the key ingredients to drive toward your dreams. And those same ingredients can be found in the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. So check out my podcast, Ways to Win, and also check out the new 2024 Ford F-150 truck. Learn more at Ford.com. Built Ford tough, built Ford proud.